I would like to know about the balance between the details and the reality now, because the books contain a lot of details which are way beyond our experience of reality. So we talk about passa, contact, sanya, and all of the details of the khandhas, the ayatanas, but actually we can't know any of that, or very little of that now. So now we're seeing, it's hearing, and it's sound. How do these details, which we cannot directly experience, help us?
They are sankhara khanda. Each moment.
Each moment is sankhara khanda. But the learning that we have to develop is not book learning.
But they are sankhara khanda from moment to moment, unknown.
Mm-hmm. So they're there, but they're unknown. So the book details are important to help us understand.
So one does not cling to the book, but understand that the book talks about whatever appears now. We are used to the words in the book, but we are not used to the characteristic of reality right now. So from hearing and understanding, little by little, it will condition the moment of bending towards the reality, the characteristic of reality right now by itself, by sankhara khanda.
And that word bending, nama, is translated as bending, which is a bit of a funny term. So it's bending is turning towards the
now,
reality.
Little by little.
Little by little. Mm-hmm. And while we're reading, mm-hmm. we can, of course, be aware of realities.
For example, when we read about realities, we understand right then that there's no self.
We can understand intellectually that there is no self while we're reading.
Yes, but we are not used to the characteristic, which is no self.
No.
But from learning and thinking a lot, sankhara khandas are now working their way, each one. No matter it is the pasa or whatever, sankhara khanda, touching the object with a little understanding from time to time.
So we will come to the point where that moment is understood, the moment of the difference between self and no self, because self is mostly always there, isn't it?
Until when we talk about awareness, it is not awareness if there is no right conditions for its arising. So many conditions for a reality to arise. So when we talk about awareness, it depends on sankhara khandas. We don't know this life or previous life, yesterday or day before, that kind of condition, moment of being aware. But by knowing that there are realities right now, and it depends on condition for sati to arise, it begins to understand little by little about that which appears. Mm-hmm. For example, hardness. If there is no understanding at all, there can never be awareness with understanding. But the more that are conditions from day, from month, and then there can be moment of understanding, even just a little. Mm-hmm. It's not clear in the beginning, but from knowing that these realities right now, one of them can be object at any time by conditions.
If I go like that to the chair, mm-hmm. I feel coldness and I feel hardness, but actually that's not the right awareness, is it?
No.
That's just being conscious of hardness and softness.
As usual. Mm-hmm. So when there's more understanding, it begins to appear well. At that moment, the difference between no awareness and awareness begins to be known.
So what is the... Clearly, we have to have a lot of patience to develop that understanding.
It's this moment.
Because it takes time to mm-hmm. accumulate.
Yeah.
But patience, there is no chetta-seeka patience. It's the...
Virya.
Virya, mm-hmm. energy, effort, and also confidence. Without confidence, there won't be that continuation.
But confidence does not appear, but it's there.
Yes. What?
Like pratsa does not appear, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. So, but confidence can appear. Sometimes we are so confident on what we hear that it doesn't appear precisely.
We know that which is that which experiences, but we don't know what are there because many things are there.
Mm-hmm.
Only at that moment it begins to understand the difference between moment with awareness and moment without awareness. And the first thing to understand is the difference between that which cannot experience and that which experiences. Usually there are four namakandas, but at that moment any of them does not appear as it is, but it is the understanding which begins to understand, that's all. And learn to understand more about nama and rupa differently, because sometimes it is moment of understanding. It can be seeing right now, or thinking, or whatever, or pain, see. But no word about it, because at that moment only the reality, the characteristic of reality is appearing clearer. Because when one says clearer and with awareness, it means that nothing can appear together. So actually the idea of the self begins to see that there's no self. It's only moment of experiencing, and that which is experienced, which is different.
But that moment is quite a high level to be understand nama as distinct from rupa. That's a high level of understanding, and I can understand intellectually that if there's the awareness of seeing, then that will lead to detachment from the idea of self, because it's not I see anymore. But until we've reached that, it's always I see, I hear.
Is the world different from this moment?
No.
This is the world, the mixed world.
Yes.
But at that moment, it's not mixed world.
No, okay. So it's just a reality as
that's
it is.
That's why there can be the understanding how dark it is.
Yes.
For that which doesn't have any shape and form at all. It just arises an experience.
When we understand intellectually about the Dharma, at that moment of understanding intellectually, there's no ignorance. There must be awareness at a level. So at that moment, there can't be the idea of self.
The reality appears as a self, but the self is not completely eradicated. That's why one knows it's not enough. Because the characteristic of that which experiences, vijnana, appears. And what about the other nama, like pain and feeling?
Mm-hmm.
It can appear little by little out of the five khandhas, one by one.
But even the intellectual understanding will condition, whatever level we have, will begin to condition detachment from the idea of self.
At that moment, there is no thinking about intellectual understanding at all.
At the moment of understanding reality, mm-hmm. as not self, no. There's no thinking of words. It's just a characteristic of
and
reality.
It's just happened by anattaness. So no doubt about anatta.
Because it's
unexpectedly.
Unexpectedly.
Yeah. If one is expecting, that is not right awareness at all.
No, and same with trying or selecting.
It hinders immediately. But nothing can hinder moment of realizing the true nature of reality is because those moments are conditioned.
So outside I can see the lotus growing out of the mud. So even though we have lots of unwholesomeness, if we listen and we consider the teachings, there must sooner or later be that understanding which realizes reality as it is.
And there can be the understanding of that level of understanding that it's only that level.
So we need to be straight with what we understand.
Keep on going. Understanding with the idea of no self.
But the understanding can develop no matter we have lots of akusala.
Right.
It could work its way to understand reality, like the lotus.
Yeah, that's why it takes time, so long, long time.
Mm-hmm. And without expectation, because as soon as there's expectation about what kind of understanding should arise and when, then it's not understanding and it hinders the development.
So Panya can recognize that expectation and then subdue that expectations because it's seen as a reality which is not the right way at that moment.
Because who knows what will be the next moment or what the next moment will be.
Panya just understands the reality. Some may think that Panya will have the effect of suppressing or somehow causing akusala tendencies not to arise again, but it's not really quite like that. There can be awareness of akusala like expectation.
I seem to remember reading that the phrase, because of attachment, attachment is eradicated. And I was thinking, what are some examples of that? And I can think of the example, I think of Anathapindika's son. I think Anathapindika paid his son to listen to the Buddha. And eventually his son realized that it was so important that he didn't accept the money.
Unexpectedly.
When you said that attachment leads to understanding, it means that attachment, you need attachment as object. You need to know attachment.
It's the object of understanding. And I think there's one or two others, but it just means it's the object. So at that moment, it's the conditions by being Aravana Paccaya of understanding.
Do you think it would be beneficial for me to pay my sons to listen to the Dharma?
You could bribe your sons
for attachment.
Who knows whether there will be any listening at any moment or what will happen.
It's just like open up the world that we used to be in, like many people and things, but actually it's only just one reality, which is the world.
Mm-hmm. So nothing arises, no world, and then taste arises, that's the world, then gone. Mm-hmm. So the whole world is actually just one reality. But there are other realities there, but only one is experience.
Object.
Only one is the object, because there will be many chitta seekers. Mm-hmm. And but at that moment, there's just that one object.
Understanding is there, see?
The thing is, when we are making reference to the world, then we can only talk about one world at a time, because it's only when Panya arises to know that world can it make a correct statement about that. If it does not have another object, then it does not know. It can't talk about it.
And it's through this world, this one world of one reality, that the world of concepts are born out of that. So there are many different objects touching, but actually, if there's no touching, there's no world of concept.
There can be anything, even thinking about that.
Mm. So
but no self who thinks.
No self who thinks. So just one reality, like hardness is experienced, then there's the thinking that it's something or the book or the microphone.
Different from other realities.
Other realities as well. And that's the lonely world, because there's no one there at that moment.
So why would be there be a lonely one when there's no one there?
Sorry?
Why would there be a lonely one when there's no one there?
It's the absolute meaning of being alone, because there's no person. There's just a reality.
Alone, but not lonely.
No, because lonely is with attachment, yes. Yeah.
So alone with the citta, but no aversion or no loneliness in that sense.
There can be anything, so Panya can understand at that moment as not self at all.
Just getting back to the Sanya and Chaitana this morning, because I looked at something I'd written before. So this is quoting from the, first of all, quote from the Atasalani on Sanya. Sanya has the characteristic of noting, marking, Sanjanana, Lakana, and the function of recognizing what has been previously noted, Pacha Binyana Rasa. So it's the function, the Pacha Binyana Rasa, the term for it.
Could you say the first one again, please?
Sanya has the characteristic of noting or marking, Sanjanana, Lakana, and the function of recognizing. First is the characteristic and
of
the characteristic of marking, and the function of recognizing what has been previously noted or marked, Pacha Binyana Rasa. And P-A-C-C, long A, B-H-I, N-N-Y-A, N-N-Y-A, long A, N-A, Pacha Binyana Rasa. After.
What is that? Pancha.
Pacha is after.
Pacha or Pancha?
B. After Pacha, P-A-C-C, long A, right?
Yes.
After knowledges, after knowledge, and the other last word?
And then abhinyana.
Abhinyana, the higher knowledge. Abhinyana. So the after knowledge of higher knowledges or something, I'm not sure actually. Anyway. You've got purajata and pachajata. It's the sort of same word there, pachajata.
Anyway, I think it just means the recognizing or knowing what has been noted, what has just been noted.
What has just gone.
What has been noted. But actually, it's right at the same moment. The function and the characteristic is at the same moment.
At the beginning of the passage, you said that it has a function of Sanjanati is translated as marking, yeah? Isn't it?
Sanjanana. Translated as marking or noting.
Knowing.
It's
more like perceiving. There's no notion of marking in that word.
Perceiving the object or marking the object.
Yeah, Sanya is sometimes translated.
Yeah, Sanya is a female noun which comes from Sanjana, if its verb form is Sanjanati, yeah?
Sanjanati.
And then prefix is san. And nya, anyway, root is nya, so it means to know. And Sanjanati means to, generally it's translated the perceive. It doesn't have to be a notion of marking.
Sorry.
Is the commentary saying that?
Yes, but then they give a lot of examples, like the woodcutter marking the trees. So from the examples, it's clear it's like marking.
But
that's the characteristic, and but the function is to remember.
Recognizing or remembering what has been marked.
So it recognizes by marking. Is that what we understand?
If there is no marking, they will not be recognizing.
It's like the example John gave this morning of what is hot burns. So it's what is marked is recognized.
So its function is recognizing.
Yeah, more like
yes.
And it's now, that's true. No matter what we say about it, it's now. This kunzu kin.
The point is that it has sort of a few different sort of facets or manifestation. It's not just like marking it, but it somehow seems to appear that it has the function of remembering too. Is it correct?
I find one remark by Jonathan once on DST long time ago that what we take for remembering is actually thinking. When we say I remember something, it's a reference to thinking. So if we're thinking that this remembering is points directly to the function of sanya, I think it can be misleading, because if sanya is there, it's recognizing, but when we say it's remembering, then it's also thinking involved.
Well, yeah, when we say remember, it's a story. It's a so-called episodic memory. So it's a story. Yeah? So you are emphasizing the fact that it's just a type of thinking rather than remembering itself, sanya itself.
No, when we use the word remembering, actually we're talking about something that involves thinking, not just sanya.
Yeah.
I think it's enough to know at this moment sanya arises at each moment, and whenever it arises it marks and remembers at this instant, and when it's kusala it marks and remembers in a wholesome way, and it's when it's akusala it marks and remembers in an unwholesome way. And Alan at lunch was just asking about sanya vipalasa. So whenever it's akusala sanya, it marks and remembers in an unwholesome way. So it remembers in with unwholesome citta at that moment.
If we think about the characteristics of reality, like sound is very different from heat, which is very different from tasting. These are characteristics of reality, all very separate, very distinct from each other, and we have some understanding of that. But a person who is deaf can have no understanding of what sound is like at all. He doesn't know that characteristic. And so I presume that right awareness and the right understanding are like that. No amount of words can describe what those realities are, because they haven't arisen. When they arise, then we know they have arisen. But until that point of right awareness arises, it's just thinking about that characteristic. So is it like when right awareness hasn't arisen, is it like being blind or deaf?
When we say, do you remember? We think about sanya.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that we think about sanya. But there are other jetasikas as well. Thinking, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The Arupa Brahma realm, there's no experience of sound or any sense object, so impossible to be aware or understand them.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, it's meaningless because there's no sound, no visible object. But now there is sound and there is visible object. And the reason why, right from the very beginning, like talking to the children, right from the very beginning, we start to talk about visible object or sound, what you call the details or the fine line at the beginning, is because if there is no considering of what is reality, then there are no ingredients, there's no way for awareness and understanding, thank you, to develop at all. So there has to be the beginning of considering, but it has to be one's own considering. If you just tell someone, oh, it's sound that's heard, and they just repeat it, it's not their own considering, so it has to be one's own considering. And so with any of the details, it just depends whether there's any wise or useful considering about the those realities at this moment, like sanya. For some people, it's just hearing about it, it's just conditioned for a lot of confusion, no wise considering at all. But for someone else, it may be conditioned for wise reflection at this moment about realities. So it depends on the citta at each moment.
Also, I think you were asking something along the similar lines in the morning regarding you know, hearing about that which you experience and versus what you don't ever experience. But since we're talking all our dhammas and dhamma is appearing now, I think it depends on the understanding. You know, even while we're talking about something that's not experienced, we understand that it's a dhamma that's being referred to. And that can condition. We can understand that that's a dhamma, like the scene now that's being referred to.
The characteristic of right awareness is something new that we haven't experienced before. That's something different, although we do have awareness anyway at the level of kusala.
Yes, but when the development of right awareness begins, it's very weak, of course, and it can be almost imperceptible to begin with. So I think we cannot say that the beginning of right awareness is like the person with sight compared to the person without sight.
And if there's truthfulness and there is development of right understanding, you would know whether or not you know, and that would be a kind of knowing, right?
And if we don't talk about sanya at all, we forget that there is sanya all the time. But when we talk about sanya, we know immediately that there is sanya right now. But sanya is not any form or shape. So it's just that which is nama.
Anyone listening to the recording now or later can't really hear it because we've got a great big storm going on outside the window, thunder and lightning.
Or sanyas.
To me, when you say that sanya remembers by marking, I think it's very helpful to understand about it.
Is there any shape and form now by sanya marking?
It's clear when this flash of lightning and how each moment there's actually, even though we're having the discussion, there's marking what is seen, there's recognizing, marking, recognizing, thinking, even in the background all the at each moment in life.
So which lasts longer, the lightning flash or a reality?
The visible object falls away instantly and it's immediately there's thinking about it, impression, idea, shape, form, colour.
But in the suttas, at least compared to the lightning flash, isn't it, I think, and the bubble.
But actually, a visible object falls away faster than any simile. That's why the Buddha said there's no simile to describe how fast it falls away.
And would you know it's a lightning flash if the citta rolls away faster, slower than the lightning flash itself?
Okay, and this one is for Sundara. So, I also looked at something I'd written before about Chaitanya coordinates in all four planes at each moment. It binds closely Abhisandhati and the function only at moments of Kusala and Akusala is Ayuhana Rasa. And so exactly, so I'm interested that the function at moments of Kusala, now Kusala refers to Ayuhana Rasa, the accumulation of karma, which as you said before, can bring results at birth or during life. And usually we use this word Ayuhana, or this accumulation, just referring to the birth consciousness, the Patisandhicitta, which contains all the accumulations of which will bring results during that life, all the accumulations of karma that can bring results during the life. But they are saying that at any moment of Kusala or Akusala, the function is Ayuhana Rasa. Any comments, further comments, Rajan?
But how can we know if we don't talk about the birth moment, the moment of birth?
Right. So one has to first talk about how at birth there is the accumulation, the ayukana, of different karmas that can bring result during that life. That's the first point. And how does that relate to the Ayukana at each moment of Kusala and Akusala, the accumulation?
To be born as human being, to be born as animal.
I see. Then, if when it accumulates to bring those results in different realms.
Could you explain the word Ayukana? Could you explain the word Ayukana or something?
It actually refers to the accumulation of karma.
Okay.
So at each moment of each kusala or akusala chaitana, there is the accumulation of karma at those moments, because chaitana is karma. And if karma conditions deeds or speech which bring result, it's not just the result of one karma. There has to have been the accumulation of karma for that karma or chaitana to be of that degree to bring those results. And at birth, we read about the ayuhana, the collection or the accumulation of karma, which is carried in that birth consciousness, the Patisandhicitta, and it's referring to the karma which during that life can bring the results.
Okay.
Because, for example, Patisandhicitta is just the result in the human realm of kusala karma in the past. But even at that moment of birth, there are other kinds of karma that bring other kinds of results, like that person may be deformed or something like that. So other karmas are bringing result during life.
It must refer to every citta that follows until chuti, because it's not over yet.
Right. Yeah. At some point during that life.
I'm not quite clear. I'm understanding the concepts, I think, really well. But, Sarah, you were saying... Sarah, I'm not so clear then. Are you saying that Ayuhana Rasa, does that refer to to chitta, which is not kamapata?
To any kusala or akusala chetana. So even now, at a moment of lobha, the function is ayuhana rasa at that moment. Even at the moment of lobha now, the characteristic of chetana is coordinating, and the function, the rasa, is ayuhana. It is accumulating karma at that moment, because even if there's no result, chetana is accumulating at those moments of kusala or akusala.
So that doesn't have to be obviously kamapata. No.
So karma accumulates at all moments of kusala and akusala.
Yes.
And when it is strong enough, then it leads to kamapata that can bring results. But it's never just the result of one karma. It has to have accumulated.
And that's perhaps a good example of seeing the danger of any sort of akusala, because they do heap up, they do accumulate, and then they can reach the sati, I think it's called, that power of kamapatta.
And that's why we consider the teachings and reflect and develop wise intellectual understanding, because it also accumulates until it's of a degree of direct understanding. Yeah.
Can we say that ayuhana means the collection of karma at moment of birth?
I would say so, certainly.
That's why people are different. What happened in one's life, like Kunina, see?
Yes. Okay.
Her birth moment is ayuhana, collects all the karma, which can produce result in this life.
Yeah, as you said, Ajahn, this idea of collecting or heaping up or accumulating, it all has the same connotation, the same meaning. I'm sorry, as Ajahn just pointed out then, ayuhana can have that concept of the collecting or the heaping up or the collection of the ingredients of the chitta at the moment of rebirth. So we have the word of collection or heaping up or accumulating, and they all relate to that word ayuhana.
All those moments of kusala and akusala, the ayuhana rasa refers to the accumulation of karma, which leads to birth, and the collection of karma, which conditions birth and all other results during life. Because the ayuhana is referred to at each kusala and akusala.
It's the answer of why people are different. It's the answer of why people are different.
Yeah. People are different, not only in terms of
because of karma
experience,
which can produce results through that life.
Like right, that's mean, one way that they're different. Each person experiences different karmas
in that life.
But what about tendencies? They're also different because of...
We talk about karma, the collection of karma for that life.
Sarah, do you not mind spelling it out in the word ayuhana? Ayuhana?
Yes.
How do you spell it?
Ayuhana.
And why?
long A and long
U. And it's translated as accumulation of karma?
Yeah, well, that's how I translate it.
And then how is it differ? How is it differ from so-called asaya?
Asya and Lucia. The Asya and Lucia referring to the latent tendencies that don't arise. So at each moment of life, the Asya and Lucia, the latent tendencies and the all kinds of tendencies lie dormant in the citta, ready to condition kusala or akusala. The what we were just referring to, the this chetana or the Patisandhi Chitta is referring to realities which arise. But you can say at the moment of birth that all those Asya and Usya lie dormant in the Chitta. But they lie dormant in the Chitta.
Yes.
So even the karma that will bring result in future, is dormant in the citta at that moment.
Karma you are talking about here is what is accumulated here in terms of karma, is it sort of with some kind of result which haven't manifested as vipaka yet?
What is accumulated is the karma, the chetana, the wholesome kusala or akusala chetana, which is karma, is accumulated.
So it's tendency. No?
As I understand it, it's
karma, but it's not kamapata. When karma is of the strength to bring result, that's kamapata. The moments that Sarah's talking about,
it functions as kamapata.
Yes, and in the meantime, you asked, is it the same as tendency? Well, we're talking about jetana, right?
Yeah.
Arising with kusala and kusala jitta, right?
Yeah.
So together with the jetana are other mental factors that are the tendencies, like attachment or metta, that sort of thing. So they are the tendencies that are accumulating. And also the jetana is accumulating, and it's called, for that reason, it's called kamma, because when it's strong enough, it results in kamapata.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no. It's still not clear. So how do you explain ayuhana? Is there no tendency sort of to commit either ksara or aksara this? Or it's different? Total different thing.
It's the accumulation of the jetana. And I guess as the jetana is accompanied by whatever mental factor that we call a tendency, then the intention relates to that tendency also.
Jan was saying one has to start by considering about at the first moment of life. At the first moment of life, the anusya refers to all the karma that has been previously accumulated that is capable of bringing results during that life.
Ayuhana,
the ayuhana that has been, it refers to the karma that's been accumulated that can bring results during that life.
What is the condition that explains that accumulations by way of upanisaya pachaya? By way of what kind of pachaya?
Mainly by pakutu upanisaya pachya and by karma pachya,
nana
karnika karma pachya, that is condition that birth consciousness at that moment. But to condition that birth consciousness, there must also be pakutu upanisaya pachya, another condition.
Okay.
Jaden, Tadala, the verb is ayuhati. The verb is ayuhati. Ayuhati. Ayuhati, that's the verb, whereas ayuhana must be the adjective. Ayuhati. So Ken is just looking at the word ayuhati and will tell you something like ayuhati, accumulates, to swim, also means to swim or to strive, to build up or something like that.
A question in relation to your comment that the starting point is that at the Patisandhicitta of the present lifetime, all the karma that can bring result is accumulated together. Now, when we're talking about kusala and akusala cittas that arise during that lifetime, they are not bringing result, are they? They are potentially storing up for the commission of kamapata that will bring result at a later time.
When we talk about karma, we talk about moment when it produces result. Not just talk about the asyanusya.
Right.
The asyanusya is in each citta.
Yes.
But what karma can produce result through that life is ayuhana.
Yes, that's one meaning of ayuhana. But this is a different meaning of ayuhana, isn't it? That we're talking about that during the life when the
accumulation
arises. Yeah.
It's there, but bhakatupanisnyapachya, once it arises, it's gone, but that which has arisen is still be conditioned for the next moment.
Ayuhana, the different karmas that would condition results in each lifetime must depend on many factors. For example, if suddenly there's a world war,
We are talking about ayuhana, and right. We know that ayuhana is karma, and it's only the karma which is collected to be able to produce results throughout the life. Just one life.
But that does not mean that all the karmas would produce result.
Not
anything can
life.
Happen.
Not in that life.
Not in that
only
life.
Only the ayuhana.
Oh, I mean, the ayuhana, that ayuhana, it doesn't mean that all those karmas will produce the results, and it doesn't mean also that certain other karmas as performed in this life may also produce result in this life.
Whatever can produce in this life is ayuhana.
But what about the karmas that perform during that lifetime that will bring result in that lifetime? That is not during birth. That is not accumulated at birth. Because there can be results of karma performed in that same life.
Because you see that we talk about different people, and conditions to make people different must be ayuhana.
On something Tadal raised, when there is kusala jeta now, or with jeta now, of course.
Who knows when will it produce result?
No one knows. It accumulates.
But if it would produce result in next life, it is ayuhana for the birth consciousness.
Right.
Collected all that can, all karma that can produce result
right.
in that life.
Right. Tadal's question is this. The jetana that is accompanied by, say, attachment, that is accumulating the...
As anusya?
Accompanied by attachment.
Because
the
it cannot produce result like karma which has been done. Only the karma which has been done can produce result. But
yes.
Just like this, can it produce result?
No.
So, that
so
is
it but it accumulates.
As yanusya.
And then when it's of sufficient strength, it may condition...
Not that one, but the one which has done, like the killing, stealing, so on.
Right. So... attachment accumulates and may condition stealing, for example, right?
So stealing is the karma which will produce results.
Right, it's the intention that accompanies that. But does that answer your question? That his question was, what's the difference between the accumulation of
that's
intention and the accumulation of the tendency for attachment?
That's why we have the kilesa vata and kamma vata and vipaka vata. three of them, not only kamma vipaka, kamma vata, vipaka vata, but kilesa vata, kamma vata, and vipaka vata.
I'm a visual person. I have to visualize everything. Otherwise, I cannot understand. Yeah, this ayuhana, yeah? To me, it's more like somebody say, at the first moment of life, yeah, say, patisandhicitta, yeah? Say, somebody is carrying a backpack, yeah? And then in the backpack, yeah? You have all the karmas you've committed in your past life. Is it not like that?
No.
No.
It's, yeah, you may have other bags, but that backpack would be the karmas that would bring result in that lifetime only.
Or specifically?
That lifetime.
A lot of backpacks behind that one. And Sukin's comment was because all these karmas collected in that backpack can bring results during that life. They are the ayuhana. And if along the way in that life extra kusala deeds are performed, we know it has to be the moment of the first jhavana. So can they be added to that backpack? Can we also say they are ayuhana because they also bring results?
We just talk about moment of birth.
Only a moment of birth would happen
depending on that.
It doesn't ayuhana. Mean it can't be other deeds, but the ayuhana is referring to the moment of birth.
But I still have a question. Would that mean that all the karmas would bring results? So because we know that sometimes life can be cut off prematurely, right? Things like that.
And then karma doesn't bring results.
Right. So it's not all the karmas have to bring results.
Karma can bring countless moments of seeing, but how many moments of seeing depends on many other factors like Pakatupa, Nisya, Pachya, and many other conditions.
It's many, many factors also, right.
What is the English name for the situation when you cannot stop laughing? When you cannot stop laughing?
Cannot stop laughing.
Yeah, what's this? Is there any English word for that?
No one can stop citta to arise.
Yeah, that's right. What I wanted to ask is, like, at the moment where, you know, you find something funny and then you refrain from laughing, and then when you see something,
even so, no one can stop citta to arise.
Yeah, so is that by power of what we call ayukana?
No.
Many instances.
When we talk about ayuhana, we talk about what can happen in that life because of the ayuhana.
Okay.
And when it talks about the function, the ayuhana function of each kusala and akusala in that life, can one say that is also because of the ayuhana at birth?
We just talk about moment why people are different by ayuhana.
Ayuhana. Okay.
People are different because of ayuhana?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Why someone win the lottery, the first prize? Ayuhana.
Have an accident or see desirable objects, undesirable objects, each moment of result of karma.
Very strange because I've never heard of that term in Kunshin's Thai talks We can hear your talks here from the for the last 50 years here, but I've never come across with the term ayuhana. Probably I'm missing something.
It's Pali term. I use Thai language.
It's used as a Thai word too.
People are different because of the kamma, ahosi kamma. the karma which has been done.
Yeah. Yeah. Horse karma. Oh, you say horse karma. Oh. Horse karma, I hear often.
Yeah.
But if we wrongly interpret this ayuhana, then we come up with some kind of deterministic view of our life, because at the moment of our moment of patisandhi, our rebirth, there's we carry a bag, and then somehow everything is determined of what kind of bag we carry.
So as Ajahn said, that's why there are three vata, kusala, akusala, karma, vipaka. So this is talking about vipaka vata. So on account of the vipaka, it depends on many conditions whether kusala or akusala arises, and whether that kusala or akusala will be of the degree of karma which will produce vipaka in future. So vipaka is only one vata.
That's why we should understand how many types of jitas are vipaka. Like seeing now. Can we select the object of seeing? Because it depends on ayuhana. But the kilesa can arise any time by accumulation of kilesa.
Like when Nina had her accident, the painful bodily feeling is vipaka, conditioned by that karma accumulated or in the ayuhana at the moment of birth. But it depends on accumulations and many factors whether that afterwards is kusala or akusala chitta, usually akusala chitta, but like now, moments of wise reflection, kusala chittas which can accumulate.
We can also think about the fact that karma at rebirth produces prasada rupas, said the eye, mostly throughout life, but in some cases people become blind, and that means it stops producing result.
We can simply say what happens is because of karma, and it means ayuhana, karma. Ready for that life to produce result when time comes.
In a sense, we shouldn't be concerned about what kind of result we foresee. If somehow we cannot help. Yeah? I may die here, or I may win a lottery, or whatever. Yeah? But it's something I can't control. Vipaka is uncontrollable. Yeah? But kusala and aksara are different. Although there is a tendency, and we accumulated properly, a tendency for performing or having committing an aksara karma, but still it's somehow, this is not a good word at all, but it's somehow still controllable is not a good term at all, right? It's totally different from vipaka. We can't do anything about it.
Vipaka is just the result. It's actually of no special consequence. It's just the result of karma. And kusala and akusala is where the accumulation is, which will lead to wholesome or unwholesome karma in future. And when we talk about vipaka, of course we talk loosely about winning a lottery or Nina's accident, but actually just moments of seeing, hearing, smelling, winning a lottery, so many different moments of kusala and akusala vipaka, kusala and akusala chittas, countless. So actually it's very precise just this moment. Like at this moment, if there's no painful bodily feeling for Nina, then it's not that akusala vipaka, moments of wise reflection or considering or seeing or hearing. There's no akusala vipaka through the body sense. So actually we have to be more and more precise.
And the ayuhana kamma condition, the hearing of the thunder. Hearing the thunder now.
Hearing kanda?
Thunder.
Yes. Ayuhana.
Yeah. So, ayuhana can be regarded as a type of vipaka.
Kamma which produce vipaka in that whole life, throughout the life, seeing right now, hearing any moment.
I mean, ayuhana itself is not the result, but is that which will produce result.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
So what's in that backpack doesn't produce results in this life, is that it, or does it go on to the next life? Does it like that karma, does it go on to another life, or do the results of that have to be experienced in this life?
I don't understand what's there at the backpack.
Ayuhana.
Yeah.
That was
his
description.
Yeah. See? I just need to separate it out. I mean, it's more like a glass, sand glass. Only so many come out. The remainder would still be there.
So, that's pointless. Yeah. It was just a description. Yeah. So, okay, back to ayuhana. If they don't bring result in this life.
There are so many karmas which are not the ayuhana for this life.
That are not.
Her question is the ayuhanas, the karmas which are ayuhana for this life, if because of various conditions they don't bring any results, can they still bring results in other lives? Well, some cannot, because some can only bring results in that life.
It depends on birth consciousness, to be born as human being or deva or animal.
So, but Sarah, you're saying in that case it becomes ahosi, the remainder.
No.
Any karma that's been done in the past is ahosi. Oh,
okay, that's the meaning of ahosi.
But some karma can only bring results during that life, and some karma can bring results later in another life, depending on conditions.
So you're saying that if not all karmas that were supposed to be ahosi produce result, the remainder, those that remain from the ahosi bag, don't work.
I don't think Ajahn likes
it. It's a hosey bag.
I think of bag when you use that word.
No, I think it's like going to a trip, because we have that cash here, okay? And the moment of birth here, then we have a large sum of cash here. And at the end of our trip here, then we calculate how much we spend. We may have some money left. Yeah?
Yeah.
See.
And that money that's left, well, some of it may be useless. You may never go to that country again, so it's of no use whatsoever. But some may, who knows, may be of use somewhere, sometime in future.
Yeah.
So many factors involved.
Let's say if you're born a fish, you can only experience so many types of akusala vipakas. I mean, okay, to all the five senses, but you would not, it would be, it's the experience of that fish would not be the same as another animal. So once you're dead as a fish, you won't experience the fish like vipaka as it as a human. Is that what the idea is? And that won't, that's gone.
I wouldn't think too much about it. I would just say that that karma is capable of bringing results in this life, and if it doesn't bring results in this life, well, maybe conditions for it to bring results, some to bring results in another life, and for some, no possibility, because for some, karma can only bring result in the next life, and this and that. So many factors involved. Anyway, it certainly made it more interesting for people who found it too technical, so now we're talking about fish and frogs.
I'm being a little bit confused myself. It seems what's being talked about now are those different jhāvana processes, that one becomes at the end of this life, if that first jhāvana, which is ditta dhamma vedaniya kamma, if that doesn't bring results, then in this life it won't bring results anymore. That seems to me very different from ayuhana.
Yeah. So that jhāvana produces only patisanti, bhavanga and chuti of the next life. Not and also anything else, Jan?
When we talk about the first moment of jhāvana, which produced result in this life, we do not talk about ayuhana.
No, that's right. No, that's right. That's what it seemed to be being a bit, to me, being a bit confused.
Was referring to would be part of, some of the ayuhana karma may have been from the last jhāvana.
Oh, I see.
So.
So if it doesn't bring its result in that life, no chance of. But that's actually, the whole topic is a little beyond
that. But all the seven citta that arise in the jhāvana, are they all experience the same object and they are of the same nature, kusala or akusala? So why is it said that, for example, the first citta of that process, it doesn't bring result in that life, then it...
Just because it's weak, because it's the first citta, it hasn't been accumulated by a sevana paccaya, so it's weaker.
Okay,
so that's why, even though it's the same jati, the same kind of citta with the same object, it's weaker than the next few.
Okay.
And the last one is second weakest.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones in between 2 to 6 are the strongest. So they're the ones that will produce results at any time in samsara. The first and the last will not produce results at any time in samsara, that because of their strength.
So, for example, if the jhāvana citta of, let's say, stealing, for example, the first citta can also bring result in this very life. That means only one citta can bring the result in this life of that very of that karma.
That's correct. That's how I understand it. Yeah, because of its weakness, it'll only bring results in this life. It's called ditta dhamma vedaniya kamma. So it can be seen and felt potentially in this life, but it may not be.
That's why it's said usually the results in this life are from previous karma in previous life, like someone gave the example of knocking the head and feeling pain or something like this, or actually that's not kamapata, but if you knock someone and then you feel pain, usually the results are from past karma more often.
Yeah, so that means that the same karma can bring result in different lifetimes as well, like what someone steals, and that stealing can bring result in the next life and then also in another lifetimes.
Well, even when we talk about stealing, so many processes involved. Do you have any comment on that, Ajahn? Her question is an act of...
Too much to know.
Too much to know. Sending a chant to sleep.
So other subject.
No, this subject is good. So, suppose that someone did a very meritorious deed, yeah, like giving alms to the Buddha, yeah? But say he was born here in this life, that good karma, yeah, may not be in his back in this life, mean that he won't be able to receive the result of such meritorious deed in this life. It's a possibility.
Right.
Though he has done such a meritorious deed, he won't have a result of that deed in his life.
Like one reads in the Teri Teragata about those who met the Buddha in his last life and listened to him, and then one reads about the great deeds they were done in previous lives, ages and ages ago. So usually it's from long ago, but impossible to know what or when.
There's also a story of a very poor man who doesn't have means to do any donation, and then it happens that day that he had the opportunity to donate just a bowl of rice to the Buddha, and that gave immediate result in that lifetime, and he became so rich.
By conditions, that's all. But we cannot, if one sees someone suddenly becomes rich, one cannot say or know that what the cause was in the past. Impossible to know. Nina, what would you like to discuss or hear about to keep you?
More about Pariyatti. I find it a good subject to talk more about Pariyatti and that it conditions Patipatti and Pativeda.
Nina, is it okay if I ask one more question about karma? Is there any general cause of having sudden death in mature life? Like many people die at 10, or many people die at 10 or 15. Is there any, due to different reasons, yeah? But is there any general sort of cause for experiencing such sudden death, immature death?
Just karma. We read about this kind of karma that leads to cutting off or the unnatural death. We can just say whenever death comes, it is because of karma.
Okay, yes.
What if sudden death and then born somewhere else is a better place?
But in Japan there are many accidents involving school kids and then they lose their lives.
But for the one who has died, then who knows what, maybe much happier rebirth, so. Nina's question. What would you like to hear, Nina?
No, not exactly a question, but I think it's good to consider more about Pariyatti.
The Buddha taught about one sutta mentioned in one of Nina's books, that the path, the development of the path does not depend upon belief, because if visible object appears, whether you have ignorance or attachment or aversion, that does not depend on belief, and then the same with the other five or six doorways. So does that mean that this things like karma and vipassana and all of these details are kind of like an extra but not essential, because actually that path of mindfulness does not depend on a belief in these things, because we cannot know karma now. It's purely believing in what is in the text, but we can know reality now. So what is the relationship between knowing about all of these details, which we cannot know for sure? It is dependent on belief and the actual path itself.
What is karma? What reality is karma?
Chetana.
And when is chetana? When does chetana arise?
Every chitta.
At every chitta, like
yes.
Now.
Yes.
So I think it just depends
whether it helps to reflect and understand more about life at this moment. For example, people often think that they can control or will or determine what arises now. But when one understands that actually intention or chetana, mm-hmm. because people often talk about intending to do good, intending to do bad, but if one appreciates that actually chetana just arises at every single moment,
mm-hmm.
like now, even at the moment of seeing, there is chetana arising, and it does coordinate the other chitta seekers and chitta. And the purpose of knowing this is just to understand that at this moment of seeing, it arises completely by conditions, and that chetana is one conditioning factor, and it's one conditioned factor at every moment during life. Because the idea, the deep-rooted idea of I can change my life, I can do something, I can have more kusala, mm-hmm. or I can understand more wisely, is so mm-hmm. deeply rooted. But so the understanding about
yes,
chetana, virya, yeah. vitakka, these different mental yeah. factors,
but
at
isn't
this moment
that the
is
bonus,
just to, for the purpose of anatta.
Isn't that the extra, though? Because I agree that that is helpful. All of these processes, chetana, passa, sanya, this is all very beneficial and helpful. But if we just saying that actually all realities are conditioned, they have multiple causes to arise, is kind of the same thing,
but it's not
in a
enough.
Cut down version.
It's so not what? Enough. The Buddha could have just said two sentences like for Sariputta,
so,
it's
yes.
enough. All realities arise by conditions and fall away.
Yeah.
For Sariputta, it's enough.
So
but for us, it isn't.
What's
that's
the
why
purpose
we...
of the sutta then? Because he said this path does not depend on belief. So why say it? If you're saying that all of these other things are essential, what was the...
No, I think what it simply means is... I'm not sure. I'm not a sutra yeah. reader, but it sounds like it means that the path depends on understanding realities, not just thinking and believing.
Mm-hmm.
Like not just going to the temple and believing that the Buddha is enlightened and praying to the Buddha and believing whatever one has heard without considering and checking
mm-hmm.
and questioning and understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
So sadha develops with understanding. It's different from blind belief, which accumulates with ignorance and attachment. So at this moment of considering chetana now, it depends on the chitta at this moment, whether there's wise or unwise consideration.
And Alan, I think your question assumes that, and you said that karma can't be known, and I think you mean the karma that conditioned the present moment
mm-hmm.
can't be known. But as Ajahn explained yesterday or the day before, when awareness of different kinds of chitta is developed, it can be seen that the vipaka chitta merely experiences an object. It's different from the kusala or and akusala jittas that think about what has been experienced.
Yeah.
And so these are cause. So there comes to be knowledge of cause and result in that way by knowing the kusala and akusala jittas as compared to the vipaka jittas.
Yes.
And then that knowledge of karma gets deeper as understanding is developed.
Yes.
We have no idea how much can be known because, for example, dependent origination, which we've read
mm-hmm.
about,
mm-hmm.
is obviously quite detailed knowledge of cause and result and different kinds of conditional relationships. And that also comes to be known as understanding of present moment realities is developed further and further.
Mm-hmm. But I was just wondering what the purpose of that sutta was, because when he said that when that sutta, if you read the sutta,
mm-hmm.
it's about it doesn't depend on any kind of belief, it doesn't depend upon speculation,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't depend upon whatever, it's just if you know that you have attachment, aversion or ignorance, that is does not depend on any belief. And yes, of course, we will know eventually that seeing is different from the kusala, but that is a very high level of understanding. The rest before that understanding arises, we are believing what's in the text.
We're not believing, no. We're not accepting as the truth, because that is not the purpose of the teaching.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of the teaching is to explain the way things are, and the Buddha said it's to be verified, each person for themselves. So it's not to be believed.
So the verification doesn't depend on belief?
Absolutely not. It depends on wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So until anything has been established by direct experience, it's not to be taken as being true. Although, of course, as confidence in the Buddha's teaching develops by wisdom, there is more confidence that what he says in respect of other things will also turn out to be the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a matter of having to believe in karma before the development of understanding can begin. Of course, if one held a strong belief to the contrary, it could be difficult. But if one doesn't have a strong belief either way, yes, there is, or no, there isn't, that would be okay.
Mm.
And in the Chankis Sutta that we mentioned this morning, in the later part, the Buddha talks about the path from going to see a wise friend and listen to that person, and in all those elements, he mentioned about reflective acceptance of view. That means that it's not just blind belief, but you listen, then and you consider, and you accept after reflection. So it's part of that too.
That would have to be based on some understanding. Yes.
But a wise friend might leave out certain bits if he knew that this person he was teaching had a bit of a problem with, for example, karma. So you might not mention that bit for a while or something like that. That's what I was thinking.
Well, we're talking about now, our own understanding, because mm-hmm. it always has to come back to understanding now. Like visible object, usually we are very concerned about what is seen and we look for pleasant objects. But when there is a little wise considering that what is seen now is just the result of karma, and the object is just seen for a moment. Even now, we have no idea if it's pleasant or unpleasant object, and it's of no consequence whatsoever because it's just seeing of what is visible for an instant by conditions, quite different from the kusala or akusala that arises afterwards. Loba towards what is seen is quite different from that which is seen. So just beginning to reflect now on seeing, on visible object, on attachment as different kinds of realities, this is pariyatti, so because it is about this moment. So hearing, considering or more about seeing now, visible object now, arising by different conditions, kusala, akusala on account of it, leading to good and bad deeds in future or understanding in future which will bring results, helps to appreciate that actually no one is there, no one can will anything, no one can change their life, no one can decide what to do, and so the thinking and worrying about what's going to happen is so useless, like how will I get back to my bungalow or what will happen, because each reality at each moment is arising by conditions, not by anyone's will. Anything you would like to add about pariyatti, Nina?
And Alan, so when with this, what Sarah just explained, so I don't think there's anything wrong to start talking about rebirth, for example. And because we know that those who, the people who try to have Buddhism without the idea of rebirth, karma and rebirth, and the problem there is not that they see the danger of believing, It's just that they don't have understanding.
I think there's a general principle here, because we have got a strong belief in karma, justifiably, because we've heard a lot, we've considered a lot.
I don't think it's belief. I think if we're talking about sadha, it's confidence which develops with understanding. So it's wise reflection about realities with understanding that is being developed. It's different from belief, like belief in God that can solve the problems, or belief that Buddha can help in one's life. It's the understanding, the confidence that develops with understanding, sadha. It's a wholesome factor.
There might be some belief intertwined in that. We don't really know precisely which is wholesome and unwholesome. But the general principle here is that there are many different teachings, there are many different types, if you like, of Buddhism, Mahayana, Theravada, whatever. A lot of those texts aren't correct. So say that we were reading here texts which weren't correct, and obviously you know that these texts, they go back to the oldest tradition, but generally speaking, we should need to be quite critical of the texts themselves. So where is this coming from? And so as a general principle, we've got to be careful that what is written represents the truth of reality. Because we don't know for sure.
So it comes down to the understanding now. That's why it always comes back to understanding what is real now, the seeing now, the visible object, the hearing, the sound. So then no matter what one reads, if one reads a lot of wrong teaching, or one reads a newspaper, or watches the television, or one hears someone talking nonsense, there's no problem, no confusion, because it's clear what is real. So even at that moment of being annoyed or having doubt, or they're just different realities. Mm-hmm. And we're not the world managers. We cannot stop other people writing what is wrong or talking nonsense, and why are we so bothered about it? So that is the reality at this moment. So it's all about understanding now. And then if one has an interest, like Nina and we write a lot, or if one has an interest in writing, one writes. If one has an interest in reading or talking, fine. If one has an interest in just keeping quiet, it's all by accumulations. So one doesn't have to think about the big problem with all the wrong view out there, because it's just the way the world is.
Alan, I think you're moving on, though, to a different question, and that is of presenting the teaching to another person. Because if I understand you correctly, you're asking about whether when you're explaining the Dhamma to someone like your son, for example, you need to mention rebirth or karma,
yes,
because
yes,
they react strongly to that concept.
Yes.
That's another question entirely, I think. And it depends on the skill of the presenter. But obviously there's a lot one can talk about, for example, the reality of the present moment, without going into karma or rebirth.
Yes, so that sutta is what I think can be quite useful for presenting to someone else if they've got a particular problem. For example, my younger son, he didn't like the fact that he read that there were only 6 births for a sotapanna. He said, that's just dogma, you don't know that. And that was a block. So he would not consider... to him, that just blocked him from going on, because he said it's just lots of dogmas, things that you couldn't prove at the moment. And karma for him, having had no, is something which is a dogma you can't prove. But this path, the path of mindfulness, actually does not depend upon belief. So I find that useful in that aspect, that you can present to him that this does not depend on belief. Yes, there are lots of things around it which do depend on belief. And for him, with no understanding, he will not have any...
I think, like what we said before, it just depends on one's understanding. And then more understanding, and when one helps others, one helps according to what is useful at the time. So it's not like any rules, so it depends on, like, the way I explain to Nana is different from the way I explain to Dao. Yeah. So it just depends on the circumstances, but one doesn't need to be so concerned about it. I think that when there is understanding and citta's akusala, it finds its way, that's all.
Mm-hmm. And you have the Kadama Sutta also, which is quite clear that the Buddha discouraged from just believing and following tradition and all that. So that could be a starting point. But, you know, sometimes the problem is not so much that that we're talking about things that cannot be understood, and therefore it can be discouraging. I think there's also the problem of a view and lack of understanding. Say if someone doesn't, we talk about other realms, about Brahmas and Devas. Some people just dismiss because they don't know. They think they're only animals and human beings. You could question them and ask them, do you even know what a human being is? Because here, Dhamma, in study of Dhamma, we start, as human beings, we're actually coming to understand, slowly, gradually learn what a human being really is. And understanding what a human being really is, then you can understand that there must be other beings.
And really, does it matter at all how many lives the Sotapanna has or how many realms there are? Because how does it help one to understand more about reality at this moment? So I think that it's coming back to this moment, like if people are not interested in or don't understand about rebirth, how about just talking about birth and death of citta right now, or different realms at this moment, like thinking of life in England or thinking of life in Hong Kong, or it's like different kinds of thinking about different realms even now.
Yes, so I think that's why you're, in a sense, you're following that sutta, because it does matter about the Sotapanna is born six times if it's blocking that person from developing understanding. And so people are different. They'll be different if they hear that, oh, you're born in the heavenly realm or in hell, they may have a block about that. So you're right, you switch it to what you get rid of that block, and so it is important.
And even for me, I can't remember, and I really don't mind how many realms there are, or because what is useful at this moment, and what can be proved and understood now. Like now, there is seeing, there is visible object that's seen. It can be tested and proved and understood right now. There is hearing and sound that's heard, immediately thinking about thunder and thinking about...
Yes, so I think that's the value of that sutta, because actually karma cannot be proven now. The chetana can, we have intention, but karma, we don't know that intention conditions the seeing, not at the level of understanding. We have, so if karma is a block to that person, we can leave it out until that person has more confidence.
You don't
need
to mention the word. You can talk about seeing now, visible object now, and how they're different from moments of attachment and aversion, and how each one arises by conditions. So one doesn't even have to use any Pali term at all.
No, and I think that's perhaps what that sutta is alluding to.
In Dharana, referred to the Kalama Sutta, the Buddha did refer to verifiable truths in that sutta when he said to the Kalamas, what do you think, Kalamas? A person who is honest, shows integrity in his dealings, would you be inclined to trust such a man? So he gives here and now verifiable truths, as he does in other suttas. And like you alluded to, Alan, that in the case of Kamma, he said, you don't need to believe in future lives. That's not essential. He did say, talked about that in the sutta, but he again said that
a man behaving honourably and decently to his fellow man will have benefits in this very life that can...
There is an exact sutra about that, that whether karma is true or not, it's still a benefit to believe. It's still a benefit to do good deeds.
But there are people who would would hear that and find a reason not to believe.
Oh yes, yeah.
Right?
Maybe many people, yeah.
And that's an obstacle in itself.
Yeah.
I explain things in this manner. I go step by step. First, I say to myself, to other people, that when we consider ourselves or we compare ourselves with the Buddha, yeah, we know that wisdom, the depth and the amount of wisdom is totally qualitatively different. Yeah. So he talks about karma, and so he may be quite correct, because we cannot judge his wisdom with our limited amount of wisdom. I go, that is my first step. My next step is working hypothesis, risk management. If there is a slight risk of having a rebirth, yeah, possibility of reborn, yeah, if 1% of that risk, then it's better not do any, not commit wrong things. Better follow his teaching of refraining from bad deeds and promote good deeds. However, it's still a conventional thing. The third level is, as far as we are not being able to see realities as realities, we cannot help having our doubt of karma and vipaka. So that all comes from, if we'd like to eradicate our doubt of karma and vipaka, we have to see this moment. If we see this moment, we can see that past is just realities. Future, it must be reality.
Ajahn and the texts all say it's only through the development of understanding of realities and the clear understanding of the distinction between nama and rupa and understanding of realities as arising by conditions that there can be the developed understanding which understands what karma is. So actually otherwise it's just speculative. So I don't see any point in talking to beginners about understanding karma, if there's no understanding of realities at this moment.
So karma is one condition that produces vipaka, but I think people in general may forget that there are so many conditions, and it's very useful to know that they are not in the book, and to discuss more conditions, different kinds, for each moment of experience.
And also you can use physics, because generally it's said that there was a big bang in the past, that is 13.8 billion years ago, there was a big bang. And it's just a universe. Now you have notion of idea of multiverse. If that hypothesis is correct, we have countless of universes in this space. Then we can determine that, we can somehow say that is one shepherd and that is another realm. There are so many worlds, countless universes. Then there may be countless places where beings can be reborn.
Ajahn, you often talk about being interested in understanding the truth. So we can always talk about the truth without referring to Buddhist concepts. I mean, that can happen as we keep on talking. Like, we can start with just the experience of daily level, seeing, hearing, liking, disliking. And that would be teaching the Dhamma without using the different concepts, without mentioning karma, without mentioning...
To find out what the truth is.
And that is harder. That is, you find people with less audience to be interested in, because most people are not interested. They're interested in stories. So dismissing stories about karma and rebirth actually shows that they're attached to other kind of stories and not because they're interested in understanding the truth.
And what you just said, Dzogchen, reminds me of a sutta when the Buddha spoke explicitly about that, that it is an amazing thing that there are some beings, though, who, having heard the disadvantages of attachment, will listen, will lend ear, where those who, when the Buddha speaks about that, they won't be interested. But it is an amazing thing that some people, when hearing that pleasant things bring sorrow, they will lend ear.
I have something else to ask about the something nothing. And we were saying yesterday about how each reality is actually nothing because it falls away instantly. And when it's understood as reality, it's like there's nothing there. And Dzogchen mentioned when other people say, oh, there is nothing, it sounds very like Nagarjuna, that, oh, there's no reality, and it sounds like there are only concepts or ideas. So we always correct them and say, actually, it's not nothing, it's reality. When it is said that actually reality is nothing, do you think this might be misleading?
I think that one has to understand what's meant by nothing, the nothingness. But actually, we think that there are many things, but in reality, it's only the moment when what arises, and they don't know the moment when it
falls
away. So the idea keep on thinking that it's always there.
So it's just pointing to how each reality is like a bubble that disappears immediately, and really it's no thing there, no utter there at all, nothing that lasts for more than an instant.
And just to have condition for not clinging to that which is very temporary.
In the suttas, the word void is used to show, is that the same meaning? Void in the sense that it's not something. It's just a reality.
There's another word, like usually void is sunyata, referring to how it's void of utter. But there's another word that's sometimes used, ritaka, referring to how each reality is nothing, nothing at all. And
ritaka.
And that, like, there is a sutta that we have a friend who often quotes, which shows that each reality is ritaka, R-I-T-T-H-A-K-A. So this is another word, and I think it is referring to how each reality is completely impermanent and gone instantly.
Like a bubble.
Like a bubble, different from nibbana, for example, of absolutely no consequence whatsoever, even. Java Chita or Great Panya is nothing in this sense. And another question about Kusala and Akusala Chitas, which most people refer to as Javana Chitas. And we've had this discussion before about how Javana is actually the function, so really it's better to refer to kusala or akusala chittas. But we also read that often the name of the chitta is given after the name of the function. So the function of seeing consciousness is to see, so therefore it's called seeing consciousness. And the function of hearing consciousness is to hear, therefore it's called hearing consciousness, can we not say that the function of kusala and akusala cittas is javana, therefore we can call them javana cittas?
Yeah, it depends on what you are talking about. If we talk about the kitta, then we talk about javana.
But if we're not talking about the function or the kitta, then better just refer
like
to kusala.
Like chakuvijnana, no need to say that it performs a function of seeing.
So then one just talks about chakuvijnana.
In the Visuddhimagga, in the section on samatha, some part it's mentioned that bhikkhu who has the sign, the nimitta, arisen at some place, he should say at the place where the nimitta has arisen. I wonder what is the place has to do with the arising of the nimitta. Why it is said that he should stay at the place where the nimitta has arisen?
What appears now?
Nimitta?
Yeah.
But that is the nimitta, like the counter image, is not just like nimitta.
So there are many meanings of nimitta.
Oh, there are many meanings.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Here it's referring to the jhana object.
Yeah. Stay at the place. Does it elaborate further? Because obviously the bhikkhu goes about his daily chores, for example, alms round in the morning. Is it referring to having found a place that is suitable for development of samatha? Because we know there are many hindrances or interferences with that, but correct. Whether it's just a comment, it's not a rule, as far as I know. Because even does it mean living in the same place, or does it mean what? But it's not a rule.
Can just it be referring to sapaya sampajanya, what is suitable, like if someone eats
right food,
the right food, then they stay healthy. So just
and
like no, that,
and sound and people
condition for kusala cittas to arise. Like if one has an accident and is sick, then it's not so suitable for one's life or attainment of jhana.
Okay.
Yeah, Tambhaktu is an example given in the Karaniyamitta Sutta. When the monks were feeling harassed by the deities of the time, the Buddha still said to them that they should still remain there. And that's one of the reasons that he recommended that they have more friendliness to the local deities. But that place is suitable for them, rather than, although they felt, they were initially feeling quite harassed by the local inhabitants.
When we were talking about the seven javana cittas earlier, kusala or akusala cittas earlier, and how each one has same objects or same reality, same concept, but they may be of different strength. So if it's exactly the same jati, the same object, but just of different strength, it just means it's experienced in a weaker way, that's or stronger
because
way.
Of the pachya.
Of the pachya, that's all.
Would you elaborate on
that? Sevana pachya.
All other conditions the same, that's the only difference.
Even for a moment, see.
Yeah, related with javana here, I have a question. Say, if we see something, then first there is a series of seven cittas, yeah? So, say, through the eye door, yeah? If that seven citta is good enough, or is that one round of 17 cittas is good enough to perceive something, a rupa as a visual object, just one round, or it requires many rounds of I doers.
No matter how many rounds, kusala citta is kusala citta. One at a time.
Same visible object, because it only lasts for 17 moments.
Yeah, but I wonder, there must be countless series of citta taking place at the mind, or yeah, to see what we, to understand what we've seen. Yeah, but I wonder, just one round of.
But usually, I think it's also many moments of sense doors.
Yeah.
But each one different rupa being experienced.
Yeah. I think just one moment of experience in the visual object.
Yeah, I doubt that would be registered.
And also, I have a question. Say, in that case, there are a series of processes at the eye door, yeah? Then, in between, of course, in between, there are javana, bhavanga citta, yeah? And then there's moments of cittas at the mind door, yeah? I'm wondering whether, can we say that it's a few moments of bhavanga citta or countless moments of bhavanga citta when we understand what we've seen? Do we have countless moments of bhavanga cittas or a lot, sort of a
fear? It cannot be known.
Oh. I'm curious. It's a fair amount of.
Even one or two cannot be known.
Yeah.
Only Vipassana Jnana is there. So it's not known as how many.
I'm not going to count, but I have some general, I'd like to have some general idea.
It depends on conditions, like when Buddha performed the miracle. Only two puankas in between. Sense or in mind our process.
So it doesn't mean, like we discussed yesterday when we referred to those two bhavanga, the bhavanga chalana and the bhavanga upacita, that those are the only two bhavanga cittas before the mind door process. Because that would be a very exceptional circumstance, like the Buddha. So countless bhavanga cittas before that, unknown.
My question is more like, in between the sense door and mind door, there are many bhavanga cittas or countless amounts of bhavanga cittas, which I'd like to know.
Countless means cannot be counted, cannot be known. So we know. Very exceptional circumstance for the Buddha, only of two, but otherwise I cannot be counted so many.
You've just spoken about the Buddha, but I've heard also Sariputta, it depends on, well, the people involved. Sariputta, I understand, Ajahn perhaps can elaborate, that he had fewer bhavangas between processes than other people do. But,
oh my gosh.
And like before the sense door process, the three bhavanga cittas are mentioned and given specific names, referring to when the sense object may impinge on the sense space, but it doesn't mean there aren't countless bhavanga cittas before that. And during deep sleep, countless bhavanga cittas.
I have a question about dukkha. When we mention about dukkha in the meaning that pleasure feeling is dukkha too. So when one can fully understand pleasure feeling is dukkha.
Pleasant feeling is not enough all the time. So looking, searching for it, is it not dukkha?
It dukkha, but now it's still like in theory that see dukkha because still following it.
So it's more difficult to understand that the pleasant feeling is dukkha. But the dukkha can be known in daily life. Any moment of unpleasant feeling is dukkha dukkha. But when it's sukha, not enough, non-stop, all the time, endlessly, that is dukkha in the sense that no one can satisfy the pleasant feeling.
For example, when you are enjoying a beer, you then want a cigarette also to go with the beer, right? So.
That's why it's called
change. Because even though the feeling is pleasant, there is the wish for other pleasant feeling.
People know it even before Buddha enlightenment, right?
Yes, it's only the third kind that is
known only in the time of a Buddha.
Sutta, Angulimala Sutta, I remember it about after he became the bhikkhu, and once he came to the village and he saw a mother and a kid were in very bad conditions, and he feel sorrow for them. And when he came back to see Buddha, and he told Buddha about what he seen in the village, and Buddha said that you can come back to the village, state that in your whole life you haven't you didn't kill anyone or something like that, or harmful anyone, and by this kusala thing that you did, you will be in the mother and the kid will be in better condition. And Angulimala answered that, Buddha, if I said that, it's not the truth, because he already killed a lot of people before he met Buddha. So Buddha said, so you can come to the village and state that, that I haven't killed anyone since I was a bhikkhu, and by this kusala thing that I did, you will be in better condition or something like that. So I'm wondering why Buddha asking Angulimala about, you know, go to the village and state that in your whole life that you haven't did any, haven't harmful or killed anyone.
Because the Buddha knew everything, about everything.
Because he knew everything. He knew that Angulimala already killed the people before.
The past, the present, the future. What would happen?
Angulimala was a little bit confused initially, as you said. But it's a well-known paradigma in Sri Lanka that the people, the monks recite to people sometimes when they're pregnant. And the Buddha said to him to go and say, Yatoham Bhagani, you know, since I, sister, have become, taken birth amongst the Aryans, I have never intentionally harmed another human, another creature, another living creature by this truth. May you and your child be well and long and happy. So as we hear that, you know, there is probably, there's no reminders necessarily in there, but out of compassion, as Ajahn is referring to, and the Buddha knew exactly what was necessary. We don't know what happened after that time. We don't know, you know, perhaps the commentaries would tell us a lot more. I'm not familiar with it. I'm reasonably familiar with the Paritta, where it's quite popular in Sri Lanka to recite to women who are having difficulty giving birth or in childbirth. And yes, it was just a support. There are quite a few of those kind of what they call protections or Parittas that help the being in sorrow. And it's a level, you could say, of alleviating pain. As we know, it's not, as you're alluding to, it's not sankara, alleviating sankara dukkha, but it's alleviating viparinama dukkha, should we say, you know, the constant pain that may be.
We were talking in Gangrajan about breath and how one way of considering or helping people to understand how what is known now as not breath is when we appreciate that during life, every jhita during life apart from 16 jhitas conditions breath. So actually breath is being, the reality of breath is being conditioned each moment. And so it seems like a very obscure intellectual detail to understand about these 16 jhitas, but it can also help to reflect on how common breath is now. I just wanted to get back to a question of Tam Bak's about, well, the 16 jhitas that don't condition breath are the two pairs of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, the Patisandhi jhita in life, the Chuti jhita of the Arahat, and the Arupa jhita. And I had a question about, so the result of Arupa would be the Patisandhi jhita, so that would already be included in the Patisandhi jhita. So that's why it's only the Arupa jhita, not the result of Arupa. Is that correct, Ajahn?
You mean in this life?
Not in this life.
In what life?
In any life when it arises, yes.
You mean breath or what?
I'm talking about how, in general, breath arises at every moment in any life, except when conditioned by these 16 jhitas. And one of these 16 jhitas, which Tam was asking about the other day, was Arupa Jhana jhita. So that is one jhita.
No rupa at all.
No rupa. So during that life, there is no breath at all. And what? And the result of the Arupa jhita, the Pala jhita, is the birth jhita, the birth in that realm. So that would be included as Patisandhi jhita.
In the
birth in the Arupa Brahma realm.
No rupa at all.
No.
By conditions.
Yes. And the jhana jhitas, so the jhana jhitas condition birth because they're not one of the 16, but in the
condition breath,
because they're not one of the 16, but in the jhana realm there is no body sense, there's eye sense, there's hearing sense, there's heart base and the jivitindriya, but there's
even,
no tangible object.
Even in the human world, the person who attained the fifth jhana doesn't have breath.
Doesn't have breath, yes. But
so in general we talk about 16.
Yes.
But we learn more yes. than that.
And when the jhana, the Rupa Jhana jhitas arise, breath is conditioned, but in the Rupa Jhana realm, there's no body sense, no tangible objects. So we talked about the reality of breath as being the tangible object conditioned by jhita. So I'm wondering in the Rupa Brahma realm that what the reality of breath is, because there are
no breath.
In Rupa Brahma realms also,
mm-hmm.
not Arupa Brahma,
no.
but Rupa Brahma realms,
yeah.
no breath. So when it talks about...
You better look it up again.
I did look it up. So when it refers to the 16 jhitas, and it refers to the 16th as the...
In this world, in Kama Vajra, Bhumi.
I see, yeah. in Kama Vajra, because Arupa is mm-hmm. mentioned as the 16th, and it doesn't mention Rupa. Rupa jhitas.
Because even in the fourth or the fifth jhana, there is no breath.
Yes.
Even the fourth jhana.
Just
because
the
sometimes
jhana.
By the way of five, we talk about the fourth as a five too. Mm.
But in the Rupa Brahma, so in the Rupa Brahma realm, because there are no tangible objects, there's no body sense. So in the Rupa Brahma realm, not the Arupa Brahma, in the Rupa Brahma realm, those cheetahs, whatever level of Rupa Brahma, they don't condition any breath at all. Mm-hmm. No, cannot be. That's what I wanted to clarify.
So, Chan, when someone's in the fifth jhana, there's no breath, but in between the jhana chittas, there's bhavanga, and that time there's breath. Are there bhavanga chittas in between?
You talk about this world?
This world.
And when people attain the fifth jhana,
yes.
There's no breath at that moment.
And when are there bhavanga chittas between
the jhana
chittas?
We talk about the moment of chitta. Not bhavanga, but the chitta, which is the fourth jhana or the fifth.
Because I'm thinking about people who attain jhana,
mm-hmm.
and the jhana continues for a period of time. Now those, it's not a case that the jhanas follow one another without the bhavanga chittas, or jhana follow each other continuously.
No bhavanga in between the period of jhana.
No bhavangas.
Mm-hmm. But the first moment, the first time, only one moment of jhana arise, and then it has to be so very skillful to have as much or more time than just one moment.
Now I'm thinking about the physical body. It does need breath, so how will it survive without breath for such a long time?
What about Nirodha Samapatti?
Yes. He mentioned nimitta, and then I was surprised that there are more meanings of nimitta. So maybe would like to know more.
Nimitta is a very deep subject. So for example, now we're talking about jhana cheetahs or development of samathas. So then we're talking about nimitta of concept. Because nimitta of earth or nimitta of, but we're just talking about different meanings. So this is the nimitta of concept. But when we're talking about the understanding of realities, we're talking about how after visible object is seen, each reality has a nimitta or sign. And so actually what is understood or what is the object of awareness, it's not the reality itself, but it is the sign or the nimitta of reality. For example, visible object appears in the mind door, or any reality that appears in the mind door. It has to be the sign of the reality, because the reality itself has already fallen away.
Okay, so if there is a scene, and then there is a moment of 70 moments of chitta, then bhavanga chitta, and then say there is a chitta at the mind door, yeah? How that nimitta is passed to the mind of chitta at the mind process, because there are bhavanga chittas.
And actually, it's not, there is not just one visible object that is seen. There are countless visible objects seen. So in fact, what is known is the nimitta of visible object, the sign of the characteristic of visible object that has been seen.
Yeah.
So if there is understanding of visible object, it is of the sign of that characteristic of reality,
yeah.
Not one visible object.
Yeah, but that limit has to be passed to the mind door, passed to the mind door, so that it becomes the object of mind door, yeah? But here we have bhavanga chitta in between the sense door and the mind door. So the bhavanga chitta carry that information to the, and pass to the mind door.
That characteristic, the visible object itself has fallen away, and then there are countless bhavanga chittas, and then the object of that first process in the mind door process
is the characteristic of visible object. So it's the sign of visible object. So we cannot say the visible object is carried or the sign is carried, but there are conditions, by many different conditions, for those cheetahs in the mind door to experience that exact replica of visible object, that sign of visible object.
And this aspect of nimitta is to do with the very rapid rising and falling away. And the simile which you'll be familiar with is of the fire stick being turned around in a circle. So it appears to leave a trail, a circle, but in fact there's only ever one point to it.
And the reason it's possible is because they rise and fall away so rapidly. So we're talking about just the smallest instant that cannot be described between those sense door processes and mind door processes.
Right, so even though there are bhavanga jittas arising in between, it still holds that awareness can take the image, the after image of the just fallen away visible object or whatever it is, and thereby know the characteristic of the visible object itself.
But how do you define nimitta? Is it rupa or is it concept?
Rupa.
Nimitta is rupa.
It's nimitta of rupa, the trail.
No, it's a nimitta of rupa, but the nimitta itself, is it rupa?
It does not rise and fall away, but it leaves a trail. It leaves a trail not because that trail, because it, of the nature of the rupa itself, because it rises and falls away so fast, there is a trail. I don't know if you want to call that rupa, but it's not just a product of thinking.
It's not a separate reality to the Dhamma of which it is the nimitta.
So that trail lasts long enough to not be experienced by the bhavangas, but be experienced by the mind door.
So sense door object must have nimitta. It's like a jet engines. You have all this.
Every conditioned reality has nimitta.
But we can call it rupa. Also, we can call it concept. We have to say it's just
nimitta.
No, because concept is the product of thinking, and this is not.
Yeah.
Concept is the object of thinking, and this is not the object of thinking.
So, when we're talking about the development of samatha, there are certain subjects of contemplation that produce an image like the earth casino. It can become a mental image after a time, so that's a different use of the word nimitta.
And that would be concept.
Yeah. So now it's two.
So this is sankhara nimitta.
And you said many nimittas, many kinds. How about the other nimittas?
I'm still wondering how come we cannot do citta at the same moment. And why not three or four? Yes, right.
Yeah.
It's just the way things are.
Dhamma, actually, is a word for it. It's called Dhamma Niyama, it's just the nature of Dhamma. It's like saying, why is fire hot?
It's just, that's the way it is. No, it's a niyama. It's a niyama is, you've got bija niyama, like why the seeds sprout. It's called bija niyama. Then you have kama niyama, why does kama bring results? It's called kama niyama. That is the nature of kama. It's the nature of kama to bring results. Kama niyama, bija niyama. You've got dhamma niyama, like the appearance of the sun, you know, when the Buddha is born, there is these certain phenomena, you know, there are different, yeah, niyamas literally mean like truths, or that's the way things are, these different niyamas.
Yeah, I know that is the I know that is the Buddha good.
But it's something not easy because, like, at the moment, there's, like, different feelings, different realities at the same moment, seeing, hearing, touching at the same time, so...
So what do you mean is... Chitta at one moment can experience many objects, right?
Yeah, like many chittas. One chitta experience seeing, one chitta experience hearing.
The fact that it's very difficult to directly experience doesn't make it less likely that it is the way things are.
Logical explanation, do you have any?
I think the extreme rapidity is a logical explanation. The extreme rapidity of rising and falling, giving the appearance of things happening at the same time continuously, is a reasonable logical explanation, isn't it?
Sorry, I understand.
Okay, so it seems that seeing and hearing happen at the same time.
Right.
But if they are rising and falling away very, very rapidly,
yes,
but only one at a time,
yes,
it would appear that both were continuous and happening at the same time. Would it not? Just like if one is... Well, the rapidity of the frame past the...
Yeah, yeah.
Gives
so,
the
like
impression
the example
of movement.
That we like, the fire.
So many of those at the same time. Wouldn't that does that explain how seeing is happening now and hearing? Because so many circles like that,
right,
and seeing and all that. It's not the way things are.
Creates illusions.
It's not the way things are. The things are what they are because there's only one chitta arising at a time.
Yeah, probably you are right. It's just the nature of things, dhamma niyama. But also, my explanation is like this. Whether you adhere to parallel process or you stick to sequential processing, Buddhism is a sequential processing. One chitta, one chitta, one chitta. If we somehow adhere to the notion of parallel processing, problem is then you create some kind of self. It's like a Swiss Army knife. There's in the body, there's a self, and then there are five gadgets. Yeah? And five gadgets doing their own task functions parallelly, in a parallel manner. Buddhism cannot assume that model, because non-self is important, So if we develop that two chittas at the same time or three chittas at the same time, eventually you create self, But our teaching is teaching of non-self, and it promotes that everything occurs one at a time.
Because when talk about self, it means something permanent.
Yeah, doing everything.
But that one is like even two chitta at the same time, it still rise and fall away.
Where do you have
this? It's 5:30, so we've been going for 2.5 hours. I think you should finish now.
Is the limit now?
Yes.
What time of limit? Rupa limita, Vedana limita, Sanya limita, Sankhara limita, and Vinyana limita. It means that it's impossible to experience directly just one reality, only the rapidity of the arising and falling away. Okay.